Good evening, good evening.
They say we in our double G-E-R, we are much more. Still we choose to ignore the obvious. Man, this history don't acknowledge us. We were scholars long before colleges. They say we in our double G-E-R, we are much more. But still we choose to ignore the obvious. We are the slave and the master. What you looking for? You the question and the answer. We trust no black leaders. Use the stove to heat us. Powdered eggs and government cheeses. The calendars with Martin, JFK, and Jesus. Gotta be fresh to go to school with fly sneakers. Schools with outdated books. We are the forgotten. Summer's cooling off by the fire hydrant. Yeah, I'm from the ghetto. With old black women talking about their sugar level. It's not unusual to see photos of dead homies' funerals. Aluminum foil on TV antennas. Little TV sit on top the big TV eating TV dinners. Girls dyed their hair with Kool-Aid. They gave us lemons, we made lemonade. But this nigga's paid, ancestry of slaves. Descendant of kings is necessary, yeah. Bling, put rims on everything. Wear Tims on every scene. They say we in our double G-E-R. We are much more. Still we choose to ignore the obvious. Man, this history don't acknowledge us. We were scholars long before colleges. They say we in our double G-E-R. We are much more. But still we choose to ignore the obvious. We are the slave and the master. What you looking for? You the question and the answer.
Good evening, good evening, good evening, my good people. Welcome to Black Justice Talks. This is your host, Imani Amara. I am here tonight. We have an interesting show for you guys tonight. I want to thank everybody who tuned in last week to my first ever episode. I do apologize for being a little bit late on the draw. I had a couple of technical difficulties. I am still getting used to this, but I do appreciate everyone who is calling in to listen or is tuning in through the website to listen, and you are greatly appreciated. The first thing I would like to talk about is, as most of you have known, this past weekend was Juneteenth. It was the Freedom Weekend. Celebrations was going on all over the place. Even with the fact that we are still in a pandemic, it was a couple events going on, whether they were virtual or in person. June 19th. June 19th. If most of you do not know, June 19th was the official last day of slavery, where the slaves in Texas were officially freed. Back then in the 1800s, of course, we did not have the luxury of social media where you get information immediately. So when Abraham Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation after the Civil War, the slaves in Texas were not aware until 2 years later. So it is really a day of celebration. So a lot of people, especially I'm just happy to see my people are aware of Juneteenth and becoming aware and becoming knowledgeable of how that holiday is so significant to us as a people. I took the time, how I celebrated Juneteenth was to sit down and educate my kids on Emancipation Proclamation, what the Civil War is about. I know I have talked to a couple of people about how my son is like, he has many Black Power moments. Like, he has his moments where he goes into rants about Abraham Lincoln and why he was not the reason why he did not free the slaves, just because he felt like slavery was wrong. It was more of him just saving the North and the Industrial Revolution that was going on up there. So I just had a conversation and just gave my kids a chance to gain the knowledge of what Juneteenth was. So to let them know that even though they've seen me celebrate it for the last, I probably started celebrating Juneteenth in 2014, 2013, around that time when I became aware of the holiday. Even though I've been celebrating it since then, I just wanted to let them know why it would be such a significant holiday and why we will be celebrating it from now on and not celebrating the 4th of July. Now, if you want to celebrate the 4th of July, that is your prerogative. I'm not going to down you because at the end of the day, I'm still going to take the opportunity because I do get July 4th off. I'm still going to always take the opportunity to spend it with my family, but trust and believe it will be some very cultural activity going on when during the 4th of July weekend and not something significantly celebrating Independence Day, because Independence Day was not, my ancestors were not free on July 4th, 1776. Now, as most of you may know, your girl is headed to law school. I am excited. I am nervous, but at the same time, I know that this is on my destiny. This is my purpose in life, is to be an attorney because of the things that I speak on and the things that I want to see. Also, if when it comes to being represented in the government, and being represented in court, if we want to conquer things like mass incarceration, if we want to conquer things like school to prison pipeline, we need to really be a part of the system. Now, being a part of the system does not mean assimilate. A lot of people feel like, and I'm going to stop before I go into it, assimilating and being a part of something is two different things. Like, you can't, assimilation means to give up your identity and blend in with something. That's not what we're doing when we're talking about assimilation. When I say be a part of the system, be a part of that change. What I'm saying is you can stay true to yourself and stay true to your culture and your values and your values and your morals to be a part of the system. It is a game. I'm going to tell you the honest to God truth. It is a game in the legal system, in the government, in politics. It's a game. So your thing is to, is one thing I learned by being a part of Art of War, is you have to learn to play the game. You have to learn to play the system, play with the system. So you have to learn the game and learn how to play it with them. With that being said, I don't feel like you should have to assimilate and just denounce all ties to your culture, to your community, just to get something done. That needs to change. And I've seen that back in 2013 when I first went back to school and started on my journey to law school, which it wasn't really a journey to law school. It was a journey to get my bachelor's degree. It wasn't until after I got to school that I realized that I actually needed to continue my education and go to law school and become a part of that change. And the reason why is because there's a lot of times in politics and in the legal system, you will see people who look like you, who will denounce you, who will disown you, and will see you just as the system sees you, as a peasant, as a problem, and something that needs to be locked away for 25, 30, 40 years. That is not okay. And in order to do that, in order to make that change, I need to be a part of the system. And that's just how I've seen it. So I decided to focus my sights on attending law school. Now, back in 2016, I had the luxury of attending a pre-law diversity conference at Howard Law University out here in Washington, D.C. At this conference, it was a panel of Charles Hamilton Houston, the second, I think he's the second. If you do not know who Charles Hamilton Houston is, You need to research him. He is one of the founding members of Howard University. He was also a very good friend of Thurgood Marshall, which is one of our first Black Supreme Court justices. His son was on the panel. This is his son, I believe, or his grandson. I think it's his son. This panel was geared towards getting people of color. It wasn't just geared towards Blacks, but it was geared to getting people of color to encourage them and help them in the process of applying to law school. Because I'm going to tell you, applying to law school and going to law school is not easy. What I tell so many people and why I feel like Black people need to educate themselves on the law is because the law is its own legal language. What something means to you in an everyday conversation could mean something totally different in the legal language. And they were, a lot of times, people of color are discouraged to going to law school. They would rather go to grad school. They would rather go to get their doctorate, but they would not, they don't go to law school. And I say that to say that people of color, specifically Black people, only make up 8%. No, 12%. Minorities, people of color, make up 12% of the legal population, meaning your lawyers, your prosecutors, your judges. They only make up 12% of that population, of the legal population. Now, out of that 12, only 8% of that 12% are Blacks. And once you break it on down, you talk about Black women, we only make up 4% of that legal population. So you're thinking about the fact that Black and brown people are being incarcerated at a high rate. So they have a high chance that their lawyer is Black, their prosecutor is Black, and their judge is not, well, no, excuse me. A Black person that is being incarcerated that's on trial, they have a high probability and high chance that their lawyer is white, their prosecutor is white, their judge is white. So these people are looking at an individual and don't empathize with him at all, don't understand his situation. They don't understand growing up in a neighborhood where their mother may have been strung out, or maybe their parents are absent from the home. Mamas may be working, or maybe their daddy's already in prison. They don't understand dealing with someone that looks like them. It's oftentimes they are looking at a system that's always against them. And so for the legal population, it needs to be diversified. So being at this pre-law and diversity conference, I've really learned how important it is to have someone who looks like you to represent you, to fight for you, and to speak on your behalf, someone who understands your story. And that was what made me decide to become an attorney and push forth to become an attorney. The role has been stressful. It has been overwhelming. It has been tiring, tiresome. But I'm here on the vote, on the verge. I'm here at the starting line of law school. As soon as fall of 2020 rolls around, I will be starting law school. I am so excited to represent my people on a different level, as much as I do. So that is one thing that I really want to talk about. As far as Black lawyers are needed, and if you know, and when I want you to be, if you are a Black lawyer that is listening, we appreciate you. I appreciate you because I know I'm going repeating and walking in your footsteps. And I was blessed to have come across some good Black attorneys who, well, one is my mentor, is a female. She has an organization called Black Girls Do Law. If you are listening, she's on Instagram, and I'm not sure if she's on Facebook, but I do follow her on Instagram. And she agreed to be my mentor to make sure to help me walk through the process. And I will, as soon as I get to law school and I finish law school and pass the bar, I will be doing the same, advocating to help younger Black people, younger Black students who are interested in law school, helping them through the process to get to law school, what it takes to get there, what it takes to stay there. Because in the legal justice system, we are needed. We are highly needed. We need to be represented. We need to be in there to change policies. A lot of people feel like you have to go into politics to change policies and laws. But let me tell you something. There are three sources of law. Constitution. A constitution is one source. Statutes is another. And case law is the third. Now, the constitution is the base. Statutes are an extension, but case laws make the change. So while you have, so don't let anyone tell you that if you want to become an attorney that you need to get into politics. That's not necessarily true, because you can make an impact. You can go and do like Brian Stevenson, who is the founder of Equal Justice Initiative, and you can fight cases to the Supreme Court law. That which is the law of the land, the court of the land, and they make the law of the land. So they pass a law, a case law, that affects the whole country, that has to be respected across the country. That is the reason they've been passing down some wins this week. As you can see, they passed a law that affected the Dreamers Act. They passed a law that they blocked Trump from overturning the Dreamers Act because they have the law of the land. I can't remember the exact law that they passed for the LGBT community, but they are instrumental in the laws that affect us on a day-to-day basis. So as federal laws that affect us, I'm not going to say all laws, because state affects us more than federal does. But you can be instrumental and be an attorney that can do that. So I'm definitely excited about becoming an attorney, because it's a lack of us. And we need to be there. Doesn't mean that we need to get there and we need to assimilate and we just forget where we come from and feel like now that we on, we can forget about the struggles of our people. Because at the end of the day, when we walk out of that courtroom, we still are Black. We still have the plights of Black people. Even if we do have six figures in the bank, we still are seen as Black. We have seen some celebrities with many commas in the bank be profiled and talked about and harassed by police or harassed in the streets. So it doesn't matter your bank account. So we still need to realize when we become an attorney, when you are an attorney, a Black attorney, that you still need, we're still needed to your community. Next thing I want to address is, the next thing I want to address is Colorado bans qualified immunity and chokeholds. I spoke on it briefly last year, that last episode last week, that qualified immunity plays a big part on why police officers oftentimes get away and get off from shooting and killing an unarmed Black person in the street. The problem is it kind of, even though it's qualified immunity, you still have Tennessee versus Gardner that came out after the fact. But I believe qualified immunity was passed in 1960s. And what it does is it means that if an officer acted in good faith and happens to use deadly force to take someone's life, then they are immune from criminal and civil cases. So they're immune from being criminally charged because they acted in good faith, and they are immune from being civilly civilly sued. So with that being said, it gave them the opportunity to say that I fear for my life. And if they say and they have a reasonable suspicion that they fear for their life and can prove that suspicion, then they can oftentimes be let off and can be acquitted of all charges, as we have seen repetitively over the last decade from the cameras and things that have come out, from the videos that have come out. So, the thing is Colorado took the first initiative step to ban qualified immunity. And what I think that is a very important step, because as I stated about police brutality, when it comes to officers, when it comes to qualified immunity, oftentimes officers are trained professionals, and that sometimes we are forgotten, that is forgotten about. Even when you go to, when they have complaints on police officers that goes unnoticed, and it still says I acted in good faith, even though this officer may have a history of complaints, a history of excessive use of excessive force, a history of racially profiling, because there are sometimes where there are complaints where people have filed on officers and say this person racially profiled me, I didn't do anything, and this is that and the third, but it's usually covered up, it's either thrown out or it, you don't know about it, you don't hear about it. So police officers, so I think that banning Colorado, shout out to Colorado for doing that. I think Colorado is also the first one that legalized marijuana. So he's like, you can hide. I think you can get high in Colorado. I think. Don't quote me on that, because I'm not sure. But they took the time to ban qualified immunity and chokehold. Now, I'm not too excited and too hype about them banning chokehold, because if we remember the case of Eric Gardner, the chokehold that he was in, he said that he could not breathe, was a ban. It was banned with the New York Police Department in the first place. So it wasn't supposed to be used. So, and it's still, nothing came about that. And my boy, shout out to Mako, because I do know he has special ties to Eric Gardner. So, yeah, so Eric Gardner should have never, that was a banned chokehold. And it was still used. So I'm not going to get too excited until you tell me that you, or we have a officer who goes to court for using a chokehold, and you actually follow through and say, okay, he's criminally going to be charged and convicted, because charges mean nothing, charged and convicted and sent to prison for doing something and stepping outside of that policy umbrella that they so often have and represent and reflect on and say about and talk about. So I'm not excited. I'm not too excited and too hype about that, but I am very excited about the fact that they did ban qualified immunity, because that is one of the key things that help get cops acquitted. And I'm just happy that Colorado took the initiative, and I'm praying and I'm hoping that states follow suit, even down to them. Now, I can't speak on the feds, because Trump came out with his ridiculous interview. I'm going to tell you, I'm going to be honest with y'all. I don't listen to Trump. I very seldom, I'd rather read the articles about what he said or things like that, because Trump irks my nerves every time he opens his mouth. Every time he speaks, it just makes my skin crawl. So I cannot listen to this man speak about anything. Like, even down to the ridiculous of, hey, I made Juneteenth popular. No, you made racism popular again. You made it. Racism, let's get some straight. Racism never died. It was just hitting. It evolved. But with Trump in office, he just made it popular, because now you have your backwoods and your backcountry white folks coming out the woodwork and is out here being disrespectful, stepping out of line, stepping out of boundaries, violating people's civil rights, violating people's right to just live. black people's right. Let's get it straight. Black people's right to just live. So Trump, I don't listen to him. But from what I do and have paid attention to, he then made talked about police reform. And the thing was is he, when he spoke about police reform, he put a butt in it. You can't talk about police reform and handling and prosecuting or changing things to help lessen police brutality and the killings of unarmed black people, citizens of the United States, and then put a butt behind it. Because I'm going to tell you what it did. It just deleted everything you said prior to that statement. So it's like, oh, we're going to do police reform, but if the officer feared for his life, this, this, that, and third. You just deleted everything. Because that is the problem. That's what's got, that's what has gotten us in the situation that we are in right now, is we have a but. It's like, yeah, we can stop, but no, that's not going to work. That's not going to work. Banning chokeholds unless the cop, if the cop feels for his life. Every cop that has killed, I have pulled the cases of unarmed black men, multiple of them. Couple of them that I've pulled is Walter Scott and Philando Castile. Every cop involved was like, oh, I feared for my life. So that doesn't, he can use a chokehold. Okay, first of all, let's look at what a chokehold entails. This person has their arm around your neck, constricting your airway, your windpipe. What person would not fight that? You cannot give that out, because then it's going to be like, oh, well, they were resisting. You were cutting off my air supply. What do you expect me to do? I'm going to fight. That's human nature to fight. To fight for your life, because you can't breathe. You can't breathe. So that is going to be a bad idea. That's what makes that statement irrelevant. When you're talking about a chokehold, if you've gotten a suspect to the point that you can get them in a chokehold, to the point that you are about to cut off their life, you have them subdued. There's no rationale. If someone, unless that person is an MMA fighter or something and just know how to flip out of chokeholds and is just very, very flexible and very athletic to the point that they could just hop out and you ain't got them in a chokehold and you hop out and you can they maneuver themselves out of it. If you got a person in a chokehold, you have them subdued. What is the point? What is the use? Why are you continuing? So I don't understand why Trump even made the statement. You might as well have just sat your ass in your office or in the bunker or down in the basement or wherever the fuck you be hiding at. Sit your ass down there and shut the fuck up. That's it. Because your statement was irrelevant. Your statement was ignorant. And your statement did nothing. It wasn't a help. It didn't change anything. We're still in the same spot. We're still in the same exact spot. So, hold on 1 second. Okay, so it is strictly irrelevant. So the thing is we need to push to have a reform to qualify immunity. Qualified immunity needs to go. I feel like as a cop, I'm not cop bashing. I'm not, because I have family members who are cops. I'm not cop bashing, but at the end of the day, you can serve up the circumstances of a killing enough. There's enough laws in place for you to serve up and be able to assess a situation that would have led to the death of a person. You don't have to have qualified immunity because you are giving these people a license to kill and get away with it. And yes, we know cops put their life on the line. Yes, I understand it. Yes, I have walked the streets of D.C. with a badge and a gun on my head. So, yes, I understand the fears. I understand the situation. Hold on 1 second. Okay, so I'm just making sure. If you cannot hear me, please send me a message. Please send me a message on Facebook at Black Justice Initiative. Black Justice Initiative. Please inbox me, send a message, or either shoot me an email at blackjusticeinitiative@gmail.com, because I don't have my business email up, but I do have my mobile email for Black Justice Initiative. So if you are having problems not hearing me, please send an email to blackjusticeinitiative@gmail.com, or send an inbox. If you have some of you guys are listening, you are personal, so if you have my phone number, please shoot me a text and be like, hey, Cece, hey, Monty, I cannot hear. I would definitely try to work, try to see what we can do, see if I can get my partner on the line and see if he can help me work out the little kinks with everything. So I apologize in advance for the technical difficulties of everything that's going on. So as I was speaking on qualified immunity, it needs to be disbanded. It needs to be banded. It needs to be dismantled. Cops are, they have a license to kill. I understand the fears of having a badge and gun. I've done both parts of law enforcement. I've been law enforcement inside of the prison system, and I've worked in law enforcement on the streets. And I understand the fear of having a gun on your arm and having to deal with people. Now, I'm going to tell you something. I work, if anybody has been to D.C. after dark, it's like everything and his mama works out there and just moves out there. You will see some of the craziest individuals come across your path. I mean, from the really drunk ones to, I've been on duty and guy that was swinging from poles, every pole, he was drunk. He was extremely drunk. I don't know what he was off of or what he was drinking that night, but every pole he passed, he was swinging from it and was dropping it like it was hot. Yes, so I've dealt with the crazies. I've dealt with having to pull my weapon on someone. Of course, it would be different standards with me. I am a female. So if a grown 6'2", pushing 300-pound dude approaches me and is aggressive, my immediate reaction is to pull my gun, because at that time, I am a female. 2, he is taller, and I know for a fact that he probably can overpower me. 3, I have a right to fear for my life, because he's larger than me. He's a man. So, yes, I will pull my weapon. But and I've had that incident to happen, and it was an incident of racism that caused me to pull my weapon. Even black men with a badge on, I still got accosted for being black by someone who was white. So, qualified immunity, yes, I understand the fears, because you never know what you're walking into when you approach a car. The fear of unknown. I know a lot of times cops are killed in the line of duty during domestic calls. That's understandable. But when you have the incident of a cop who has 17 to 19 complaints in his jacket stand and kneel on a black man's neck for 8 minutes and 46 seconds, qualified immunity needs to go. When you have a cop responding to a call and shoots a 12-year-old boy in a matter of 1 to 2 seconds, within a matter of a minute of arriving on scene, he didn't even have a chance to ask him what was going on. He shot and killed Tamir Rice within a minute of arriving on scene. When you have things like that happening, you really need to reassess qualified immunity. When you have cops who are serving, no knock warrants, who have not vetted their information to know that the suspect that they are serving the warrant on is already in custody, and to fire 25 shots into an apartment that went through an apartment and hit other apartments, and to kill a young black woman and shot and killed her with 8 shots, you need to reassess qualified immunity. It has to go. It has to go. It has to go. And we still have not gotten charges for Breonna Taylor. That's when you know qualified immunity has to go. We have a woman, a young black woman, who was a telecommunicator for the emergency dispatch services, emergency service dispatcher. That's what she was. That was gunned down in her home, because of a no-knock warrant and 3 officers who did not do their job. That is negligent homicide. Even if you don't give them first-degree murder, if you don't give them second, that is negligent homicide. That is at least 7 to 10 years right there. You neglected to do your job. As an officer, before you serve a warrant like that, you want to vet your information. How do you not know that the person you're looking for is already in custody? Y'all talk? Yeah, y'all talk. You just didn't vet your information. You didn't. And then to lie on your police report. Completely lie on your police report. Completely lie on your report card. I mean, on your... Lord, excuse me. Completely lie on your police report that you turned into your superiors. That is disgusting. They did it because they can get away with it. They did it because they know that the blue wall will protect them. It is time to tear down those black walls, those blue walls, black and blue, because some officers wear black, some of them wear blue. That blue wall got to go. Qualified immunity has to go. Because Breonna Taylor should be still with us today. Tamir Rice should still be with us today. Philando Castile should still be here today. George Floyd should still be here today. These individuals should still be here today if you had have done your job. You can't sit here and tell me that you can sit here and you have officers that can go to a white residence, they can fight, they can kick, they can assault them, threaten them, and they make it to custody. But you got black folks that are being killed and gunned down in the street, unarmed. I don't care what they did. Whatever they did, they didn't do that felony right there in your vicinity for you to kill them. That's not justification. Rashad Brooks should still be here because a cop didn't do his job. Even in the midst of this whole protesting and rioting and we fussing and we upset and we hyped and we mad, you still had the audacity of 2 Atlanta police officers gun down a black man. And don't sit here and tell me because he took the taser. I don't give a damn about that taser. That taser, first of all, he was drunk. So I doubt he even had an aim good enough to do anything, any damages, for them to use deadly force. A taser, you have heard a cop say, I'm going to use my taser because it's non-lethal. But then you turned around and used lethal force against a non-lethal object? They should still be here if you did your job. We're not asking you to be perfect. We're asking you... No, we're not asking. We're telling you to do what you were trained to do. Wait, that's an oxymoron because you were trained to kill. We're telling you to do your job by policy-wise because you are trained to kill. So I can't say that. But you have to do it. You need to stop with us. We are humans. We're living things. You, some of you guys can care more about animals than you care about a living black person. What sense does that make? And, like, I don't get it. I honestly do not get it. And one thing I want to address, which brings me to my next point, is we have the government. We have corporations that have come out. Everybody is saying, I mean, I can't even go shopping on the website without seeing a Black Lives Matter, message on anybody's, on just about every website I've visited, if I visit it, because I don't do much shopping. But you, it's I've seen it. Amazon is one of them. Black Lives Matter, even for Juneteenth, they made for one of the warehouses broke up and had this whole Juneteenth celebration and balloons and everything to celebrate their black workers. I commend you. But I'm going to need for them same corporations, put your money where your mouth is. Most of y'all are part of ALEC. Don't forget about that. If you have not seen the movie or the documentary 13th by Ava DuVernay, it is very good. It's on Netflix. It's on Netflix. So if you have a Netflix account, you need to watch it. ALEC is a very is a major corporation that invests in private prisons. They also have the backing of many of your big name corporations that are out here saying Black Lives Matter, and they push for certain legislation to get passed. If you're gonna talk about it, if you're gonna say and go put on your website that Black Lives Matter and that racial discrimination is not tolerated, I'ma need for you to put your money where your mouth is. I'ma need for you to go holler at old boy ALEC and tell them to push legislature that protects black people, that pushes police reform, that bans qualified immunity, that bans chokeholds, that brings accountability to these rogue officers out here that don't know how to do their job. You literally have police officers walking around here, walking off jobs, not responding to calls because they're mad because they can't kill black people. What does that say about you as a police officer? You mad because you can't kill a black person, so you gonna get mad and you gonna walk off your job. You need to be fired. You need to have your ass at the unemployment office. That's what you need to do. Because if you mad because you can't do your job and you don't know how to de-escalate, your ass don't need to have no gun on your waist. If a black person scares you to the point that you need, even if they unarmed, that you need to pull your weapon, your ass don't need to be a police officer. You don't deserve that badge. You don't. And I said it. Yes, I said it. You don't deserve that badge. So I'm going to need for all these corporations, because as you can see, they're talking about taking Aunt Jemima off the pancake syrup and the pancake mix and all of that. Taking her off. Okay, that's nice. That's cool. What about police reform? What about these policies? What about pushing these states to hold these police officers accountable? What about pushing this legislation? That police reform. Oh, you tearing down statues. That's nice. That's cool. That's cool. Turn down these Confederate statues. That's nice. What about police reform? What about ending the disparities in health? What about ending school to prison pipeline? What about ending mass incarceration? What about the war on drugs that started incarceration? What about that? What about redlining? Residential segregation? That's to me, you all talk. And I'm going to tell you something. I've been doing this for a while. I've been an advocate for at least half a decade. Because I'm going to tell you the honest God truth. When I started in law enforcement, I didn't have this mentality. I was brainwashed. But then I woke up. I don't like saying I'm woke. I don't like that, because some people too woke. Some people are entirely too woke. Them people irk my nerves. I literally, and when I say some people are too woke, I literally had somebody got mad because if you guys have not been watching, have not are not aware, Bubba Wallace, NASCAR. Bubba Wallace is a black NASCAR driver. If you look at him, he does not look black because he is mixed. He does look a tad bit black because he has the curly hair, the curly kind of rough looking hair. I don't like saying our hair is rough, but it's like curly. It's a little textured. And he has a tint to him, but his mama is black. His dad is white. So he is mixed. He would qualify for black. Because if you go back to the 1/5 law, all you got to do, all you need is a drop, and then you consider black. So I've seen one of these too woke people that's too woke say, because he's driving the NASCAR, it is letting him, they have made a Black Lives Matter car, NASCAR. And Bubba Wallace is going to be the person that's going to drive this car in the races that's coming up. Now, I don't know what race is coming up because I don't follow NASCAR. Right? I haven't followed NASCAR since Dale Earnhardt got killed in that bad accident. So I'm just letting you know, I'm way out of touch. Because if you know when that happened when I was still in high school. And yes, Dale Earnhardt is white. And yes, I mentioned him. And yes, I did used to watch him when I was little, like I said. But anyways. Somebody commented was like, that's messed up. Why is that? Why is he driving it? Why can't a black person drive the NASCAR that says Black Lives Matter? And I was like, but he black though. Like, I don't get it. Y'all are the two woke people that I don't like about. I don't like talking to y'all because y'all make my skin itch. Because you too black. You too black. Like, you too, you so black. You're so pro black and so woke that you become a slave to your own ego, and that I can't deal with. I'm not gonna argue with you about that. But the thing is I didn't used to think like this, but now that I am, I have been doing this for a while. So when you see corporations coming out and you see these organizations talking, they are pandering because. I listen to C-SPAN. I watch C-SPAN. I listen and watch the legal websites. I watch what is Congress doing during all this time. Like just recently, I'm always torn between Democrats and Republicans because I feel like as a black person and the way the history of Republican and the Democratic Party that we do even though there's an independent party. We need our own political party. So that's a conversation for another day. But I do see where they are talking about addressing they're proposing bills in Congress. And they want to not ban qualified immunity, but just soften the touch on police reform because they don't want to upset those who are upset that they can't kill black folks. So they are softening this. Republicans are presenting this soft bill on police reform. And Democrats is like, wait, nope. We want, because let me tell you, Democrats got the perfect agenda right now. They have the perfect angle because with the world on fire about police brutality to the point that it's being addressed with the UN, you really have, if they go through and talk about police reform and put the necessary things in it for us to see. But I'm going to tell you something about a bill. A bill is 900 to 1,000 or more pages long. So don't believe the hype when Democrats are doing something, because trust me when I tell you that they may be doing police reform and they want you to know this is what our bill is, this is what our plan is for police reform, but I guarantee you there's going to be a sacrifice somewhere else that's going to always disadvantage black folks. I'm just being honest. Because bills are 900 to 1,000 and some pages long, and they may address police reform, but guarantee your education, your health, your the market, the stock market, those things are going to suffer. Something's going to suffer that's going to be on the back end, that's going to slightly still keep Black folks disadvantaged, because I told you last week on my show that racism does not disappear. It evolves. And it evolves through case law. It evolves through legislature. It evolves through them passing laws. So guaranteed, but they have the perfect, I see it for what it is, but they have the perfect angle right now, because the Republicans are trying to be soft and save the police, and the Democrats are like, nah, burn their ass to the wolves, because they want to win the election. And I don't blame them, because hell, I want Trump ass out of office too. Shit, the motherfucker's an idiot. He's an idiot. Like, the man throw temper tantrums on Twitter with celebrities. Like, what president does that? What president does that? The man is an idiot. He has no business running the country at all. The man couldn't even run a business. He done ran every single one of his businesses in the ground. But y'all done made this man and got him leading the country. I don't get it. I don't get it. But to each his own. But you have these statues coming down. You have these statues coming down. You have the abandoned Confederate flags. You have them coming down, but we have lacked police reform. And my frustration right now is with my community is I don't want us to lose this momentum, and I don't want us to get distracted on and get caught up with Confederate statues coming down. Now, I'm not going to lie, today be on Facebook before my show started, because I grew up in Warren County, North Carolina. Look it up on the map, because I'm not about to explain where it's located at, because nobody never knows where Warren County is, because it is the countryest southern county I've ever lived in. maybe because I grew up there. But it is country. Backwoods, I mean, it is country as crap. And if you go through the town of Warrenton, I mean, even the courts are not even updated. The court is not modernized like today's court system. You literally have the courthouses from back in the day where they sold slaves on the front courthouse lawn. That's how old and outdated Warrenton and Warren County is. I can talk about this because this is my hometown. I was born and raised there. I grew up there. But I have always known that Warren County, North Carolina as a state, is racist as fuck. But Warren County, I've had my own racial encounters there growing up in Warren County. So the funny thing to me is a few years ago when I went, well, back in 2011, 2012, when I started coming into my wokeness, quote unquote, because I don't have a new word for it yet. But when I started coming into my mental and being aware of what was going on within my community, I had encounters with some of my racist castmates who, when I posted something, whether it was about Obama or if I posted something about a police killing, because it was 2012, because it was Trayvon Martin was one of the ones that hit me to my heart, because at the time when Trayvon Martin was killed, I seen my nephew, because Trayvon Martin was 17 when he died. My nephew at the time was 17, and my nephew at the time loved hoodies. Now, I don't know if he still loves hoodies like he used to, but he, at the time, if you seen my nephew had the tightest hoodie. He would literally go to Aeropostale, American Eagle, or wherever it was that he got his hoodies from, whether it was like that little Spencer's, he would have the coolest hoodies on. Like he was a hoodie fanatic. So at the time I seen Trayvon Martin that got killed because he was wearing a hoodie, I seen my nephew. He was 17 and he loved hoodies. I had a problem with that, and I spoke out against it. Now, mind you, my classmates from Warren County, North Carolina. Yes, that's my country. Warren County were upset that I was posting about Trayvon Martin and killed, because I was posting about Obama winning the election because I was capping for a black president. They was mad, and they would hop on my post and would tell me how I was wrong, why I needed to shut up, and how it was not fair for what I said. And I was like, are you kidding me? Are you serious? These people I went to class with, I went to school with these people. So it's funny to me to see that one of the Confederate statues that was sitting in the courthouse lawn, in front of the courthouse in Warrenton, in Warren County, North Carolina, has been removed. And I'm going to tell you something. The commissioner board, they had a petition going around, and I didn't sign it. I'm going to be honest, because, again, the Confederate statues are not my focus. Laws and policy is. They went and they had this going around. So the county commissioners were four people, two white, two black. They all voted unanimously to have the Confederate statue removed. It sent an outcry throughout Warren County. Every white person out of the woodwork came out and was speaking on why this is such a bad thing and why this is wrong and how we're trying to erase history. If you do not understand at this point what the significance of Confederate statue is, you are racist. You're racist. At this point, you're racist. And again, racism, I am no longer accepting racism as being ignorant. It is a choice. You are choosing to condone this. You are choosing to be this way. And this is the people I grew up with. Because now the people who are fussing is either their grandparents, their parents that are fussing about it, or they're either my classmates. Because I am in my 30s, early 30s, I'm saying like that. I'm in my early 30s. So these are classmates that are raising kids that's going to be the age of my kids. This is what you're instilling in your kids. I'm raising my kid to love yours, and you're raising yours to hate mine. That is a problem. This is in my hometown. But commissioners, courts, cities are rushing to get rid of these Confederate statues because they feel like you will see it as, okay, we're listening, so we're going to do this. That's a pacifier. Do not fall for the okey-doke. Don't fall for the okey-doke. Please don't fall for the okey-doke. It is not okay. It is not okay to lose the momentum of this movement. George Floyd, the killing of George Floyd, woke up the world. And we need to continue the conversation. Don't let it go unscathed. Don't lose this momentum. We have their attention. We need to tell them what it is. We need to not accept anything less than what it is for us. Because I'm going to tell you something. Like I said last week, this conversation, the solutions that are needed, is going to make you uncomfortable. But if you are truly and morally with us, you will be willing. Growth allows you to accept that uncomfortability and move past it to move forward. Because if not, you're going to continue to see us for what it is. And you're going to eventually be a part of the problem. And silence is not an option either. Because silence means you're complicit in my hurt and pain, and that's a problem. That's a problem. Hangings. I have seen a lot of hangings that have come out of the woodwork, and they're being ruled as suicides. Now, I work, most of you may know, if you don't know, I work as a crisis worker. So I deal with suicidal people on a weekly basis, because I don't work daily with suicidal people. I work weekly with suicidal people. I work daily with people who have thoughts of suicide, who have attempted suicide, who want to commit suicide. I'm going to tell you how far, the only time I've ever seen hanging as a suicide was when I was in the prison system. And that was because they had no guns, no pills, nothing else but to rip their sheet up and make a something to hang themselves with. That is what I seen. These hangings are not suicide. As usual, any movement, any black liberation movement that has taken place in throughout history, there has always been a response of white outlash, white backlash. There has always been that backlash. There's always been that white backlash. From the 60s to the civil rights movement. And I'm gonna need for y'all to stop using Martin Luther King name. Because I can pull you, y'all love seeing and showing where he walking hand in hand with folks. I'm gonna need for y'all to show them pictures where they turn, where these police officers and where all these government officials turned on water holes on him and protesters and turned the dogs on him, because that was y'all response to his piece. Just like Colin Kaepernick. Y'all response to it was to ban him from the NFL and get him blackballed from the NFL. Now he is moving and he's still, because let me tell you something. When you got the favor of God on you, ain't nothing nobody can do to destroy you. So shout out to Colin Kaepernick, because that man is still moving and still standing with the movement. He has not buzzed on his views. He has not buzzed. He has not stopped. He has worn on with his organizations, and he's still out here rocking his afro and still out here donating to protesters who have been locked up for protesting. So I'm going to tell you something. Y'all going to stop using Martin Luther King name. Y'all going to stop using it. Because even his march on Washington was met with violence. He was always met with violence. So don't sit here and say he wanted it to be peaceful. Y'all met him with violence. Y'all used to bend the man. Y'all locked him up 3-4 times. Like, are you serious? He got more mugshots than anything. But y'all want to say that he was peaceful. Yeah, he was peaceful. But y'all definitely didn't meet him with peace. The government did not meet him with peace. Edgar Hoover, the leader of the FBI, made it his mission to destroy Martin Luther King. He made it his mission to destroy Malcolm X. He made it his mission to destroy the Black Panthers. He made it his mission to destroy Stokely Carmichael. So I'm going to need for y'all to stop using that. I'm going to need for y'all to stop using Martin Luther King. Stop passing this picture around. Ain't nobody trying to hear that, because nothing in this country was gained on peace. Y'all didn't peacefully come over here and ask for the country. Y'all didn't ask the Native Americans for land, and they was nice and gave y'all land, and y'all still was like, that's not enough. We don't take it all, so we just going to move y'all on out of here, because if you don't know, read about the Trail of Tears. So y'all had never taken anything in a nice and peaceful way. Even in the American Revolution, y'all didn't take that peacefully. Y'all asked the king, and he said no. So what y'all do? Y'all revolted. Y'all Boston Tea Party. Y'all sold all the goods in the river. Y'all rioted. Y'all burnt down stuff. So stop it. Stop that. That's going to have to stop. But these hangers are not suicide. And I'm going to tell you something just to go back to that. Because I went off on my little rant for a minute. But the thing is these hangings, most of the time when I see individuals who want to talk, and I talk to individuals who want to commit suicide, hanging, I've been working as a crisis worker for over a year. I have yet to see anyone say, oh, I want to hang myself. That is not a method of suicide that has come across me. Now, I haven't talked to everybody who is wanting to commit suicide, so I'm not saying that it's not, but I'm just saying it's not common. It's not common enough for me to have heard. Like, I've been working for over a year, and I've not once heard someone who says that they're thinking and contemplating suicide that they want to hang themselves. They have had take medicine, wreck my car and run it off a bridge, jump off a bridge. I've even had somebody come to me and say something about swallowing a bunch of apple seeds. Yes, you can commit suicide by eating and consuming too much apple seeds, because they do have cyanide in them. So didn't know that, but that was interesting when I found out. I had to Google it because it caught me off guard. But I have even had something as weird as that, but I have not heard someone say, I want to hang myself. So I'm not saying that it's not But I'm just saying that I do not believe that these random hangings of these black individuals are suicide. You're going to have to give me proof, especially when a couple of them were found hung with their hands tied behind their back. I don't know too many people who can hang a noose around their neck, tie their hands behind their back while they gasping for air to hang themselves. I'm just saying. You make it make sense. You got to make it make sense. Make it make sense. And my partner, she was on last week, named Janae. She talked about how we have gotten so many cases that you do not hear about that is suicide, that of our hangings, and they're saying that they're suicide. That is not happening. All I can say is protect yourself. Look out for yourself. And I'm going to say this to my non-black people, the ones that are standing for us, because I cannot sit here and say that I don't have some few good ones that I know of. Be careful as well, because there are situations where I have seen they have been attacking you guys too. They have been hurting you. And even in the civil rights movement down in Alabama, when they went down to when the voting rights bill was passed, and they were trying to spread voting rights down in Alabama, Mississippi, some of your freedom riders, they were white, and they attacked them, and they killed them. They took a business. So if you're not black, and you are listening, you be careful as well, because standing for us apparently is a cost. It's dangerous because they do not want to see it. So you have to protect yourself as well, because you will be the target of an attack. Because it's gonna be like, why? Why are you standing with them? It's nothing wrong with you. You just morally made right. You were raised right. You had parents that had good sense. You are morally in your right mind. And they have a problem with that. So just protect yourself. And my people, especially, protect yourself. Late at night, if you do not have to go out of your house, if you have to go, don't go by yourself. Don't walk, don't ride your bike. Don't do none of that by yourself after the sun goes down. It is sad that I have to say that because it does bother me a little bit, but I want you to be safe. I want you to be safe. One of the things I did mention earlier was talking about police resigning and walking off of their jobs and everything over the fund police, because I don't think they understand. They don't fully understand what defund police. A lot of people don't understand what the statement of defund the police means. When people are talking about defund the police, they're not necessarily talking about ban police and disband police and get rid of police, because we need you to protect and serve. It's never saying that you're not needed. We just need you to do your job correctly. But defund police is because police officers usually go through Some officers go through 6 to 8 weeks of training. Some maybe 16. Me personally, I had experience. So my training when I transitioned from being inside of the prison to walking the beat, my training was 8 weeks. Yeah, my training was 8 weeks. So, It just depends. You do not understand that it's not enough time to understand someone who is having a mental breakdown. That it's not enough time to understand how to deal with someone who may be bipolar or who is having a manic episode. That is not enough time for you to assess, to understand all of the issues that you have to respond to, because you have to bring it back and think about what we use the police for. We use the police when someone needs to be locked up, even in suicide, which working as a crisis worker. Police is the first one we call when somebody is threatening suicide. That is, and I've had where I've dealt with people who are scared for you to do an intervention on them because the police come busting their house, tie them down and walk them out the door and take them kicking and screaming because they are protecting them, but end up hurting them. So it terrifies them. And is a traumatic experience for them. So imagine being black in America. So, but anyways, like defund police is not saying that we want to get rid of you. It's saying we want to demilitarize you because you have this train to kill mentality that you shoot first and ask questions later. It's telling you that we're wanting to train you to be culturally sensitive and to understand the people that you are policing. Specifically, if you are patrolling an urban neighborhood, if you are patrolling an urban in a black neighborhood, you need to understand the people that you are policing. You don't need to be out here on 1,000 ready to shoot the first person that step out of line with you, because that is the wrong way to be. That is the wrong way to police a community. That is the wrong way to police a community. So I'm gonna need for you. I'm going to need for you to understand what defund the police. Defund the police means they are taking the funds that is usually used to militarize the police, redirecting it into resources so that if a cop gets a call and says, this person is having a manic episode, this person is suicidal, this person is having a mental breakdown, you don't immediately go to deadly force. It means you go back to your car, you go back to your radio, you call the on-call social worker, on-call therapist or doctor to get them on site to understand this person and help get this person to the help that they need and stop traumatizing that person to the point that no one wants to deal with you, especially if you're policing black communities, because that is not the way you handle that. Because one thing, that's another conversation, but black people ain't supposed to have mental issues according to some police officers. You don't have police, you don't have mental health issues. That's another conversation for another day, because that goes back into how the health field works when it comes to the racial discrimination and the racial divide in the health field when it comes to medical and mental health. So it's y'all reading, if you are a cop and you don't understand it, I'm gonna need for you to do your research and stop speaking off your emotions, because right now you are speaking off your emotions. And to add to that, Blue Lives Matter, I'm gonna tell you the problem I have with Blue Lives Matter. And if you out here chatting that Blue Lives Matter, Blue Lives does not exist. I ain't met a blue person a day in my life. I haven't met one. I may have met somebody that's so dark that they black and blue, but I ain't met no blue person that is walking around. Why are you laughing at me? I have not met no person that is blue. That shirt, that uniform can be taken off. That uniform you don't have to wear. You don't wear it 24/7. My skin color, on the other hand, I'm always be black. When I die and go in the grave, I'm going to be black. When I wake up in the morning, look in the mirror, I'm black. When I was in my uniform, I was still black. When I got off work, I was still black. Shush. I don't understand Blue Lives, because you are comparing Blue Lives is in response to Black Lives, but you are comparing a profession to a person's human rights to live. That is no comparison at all. That is no comparison. I do not respect you if you say Blue Lives Matter, because at no time are we saying that cops are always wrong or everything. We are talking to you. We're telling you we want accountability for you taking away our basic human right to live. That is not right. There is no comparison. There is no comparison. And I have a problem with that. I have a problem with that. And if you come to me with Blue Lives Matter, I'll probably cuss you out. I'll cuss you out. But that is, I'm going to need for y'all to get an understanding of defund the police, because right now your emotions is high and you don't understand. But if you're a black cop, and that's another thing, you understand both sides. Because I can pull up cases, especially in New York, where black officers have been off duty or undercover in plain street clothes and have been shot by their colleagues. Matter of fact, it's an incident in Richmond, Virginia, where a black officer was shot by a white officer. These are your colleagues. These are your colleagues. Like, come on now. You are that uniform did not mean anything. That badge didn't do anything for to keep that white officer from taking that black officer's life. Well, actually, I think the one in Richmond actually lived. But he was shot. I think he's paralyzed. I got to research that, and then I'll get back to you on that. But I believe he was shot, and he lived. But they didn't. They felt like that cop did nothing wrong. And I believe he skated off. And he did not get charged. He did not get convicted for his actions. And he racially profiled his own colleague. So that is the problem I have when you compare. Your response to Black Lives Matter is Blue Lives Matter too. Because regardless, we're born black. You chose to put on that uniform. And in my opinion, if you do not know how to interact and treat all people with their basic human rights, you don't need to wear the badge. You are a disgrace to it. You're doing more harm to good. And my thing in the matter is officers, you know who is your colleague that's racist, that racially profiles. You know it. But I understand you. Some people ain't willing to sacrifice and say, hey, this is my bread and butter. This is how I pay my bills. I understand that because I've been in that position before. I understand it. I guess it's the Leo in me. Hush, Khadijah, I know you're laughing. I guess it's the Leo in me. I just can't be quiet. I'm argumentative. I'm going to argue with it. So it is what it is. So I understand if you don't want to say, but you know who in your force, in your job, you know who's racially profiling. You know who discriminates. You know who pulls someone over and had no viable reason. But you are stuck with standing with this officer because that's your brother in blue, or standing up for the fact that it was wrong. And that needs to change. That needs to change. And as a matter of fact, it's sad that it doesn't even need to exist. It should be an open forum or open door policy where if your colleague is doing something that is a violation of someone's civil rights, you shouldn't be penalized for whistleblowing. But it happens. So I understand. But at the end of the day, I don't respect it. Because at the end of the day, it could have been you. It can be you. Because every day you walk out the house without your uniform on, you are a target. Every day when you go somewhere and do not have your badge on you, you are a target. So at the end of the day, it could be you. So I understand that. I do notice that one of the officers in the Breonna Taylor case was fired. And I'm always saying, I'm going to say, I think my daughter wants to speak because she just keeps dwindling around. But I want to say that is not enough, because even though Brett Hankison was fired, he can still go and be the officer, the neglectful officer on another force. Now, I admire that there are some police forces that are coming out here saying, if you got this in your jacket, we're not going to hire you. That sounds good, but I'd rather him have a criminal record, because if you won't hire him, the next one will. Because not all police officers and not all police forces have come out and say that. So if you won't hire him, someone else will, and that sounds good, but you know police officers and law enforcement also are short-staffed a lot. So when it comes down to crunching them numbers and you need that number and you need that breathing body in their uniform, you ain't going to think about what he got in his jacket that kept him, that he got fired for, or the complaints that he had of racial discrimination, or that he trigger happy, or that he's good for, he has a history of using excessive force. You're not going to care. You want him in a uniform. He a breathing body. He know the job. He knows he's a police officer. So you know he has no problem passing the training. Nah, that don't work for me. I need Brett Hankison to be charged. I need the other two officers, Costco. Oh, give me 1 second. I'll say names. I need Mattingly and Osgrove both to be fired and charged. They all need to be indicted. You pass Breonna's law, you need to charge these guys. These guys need to be charged and convicted of negligent homicide at the least. That's the least. That is the least that they need to be charged with. So it's all what I'm until you arrest them. Until you, I'm going to keep sending my emails. I'm going to keep calling. I'm going to keep telling everybody that they need to call and make Louisville push to get justice for Breonna. Because she should still be here today. She should still be here. One of the last things that I want to address for tonight's show and tell you, it has come out that the UN, which is the United Nations, which is one, is part of the World Court, is to hold a debate on police violence in the United States. Now, the problem with this is it's a good gesture, and I'm not against it. It needs to be addressed. It needs to be addressed on the world. The World Court needs to be, and it needs to be addressed within the new United Nations. The problem is if they imply sanctions on the United States, how are they enforced? That's my question. Can you even sanction the United States at this point? Because the United States has actually removed themselves from the United Nations. They have removed, they were one of the biggest contributors to the United Nations. They was contributing the most money, which is why I'm happy that Africa is involved, because the only continent that can match the United States when it comes to money is Africa, because they have every single natural resource known to man in Africa, which is the reason why everybody wanted Africa. Everybody got their hands on Africa. Everybody want to go to Africa. Everybody wants to touch Africa. It is one of the biggest natural resources. They have the biggest natural resources to every natural resource known to man. So that is why I'm kind of want to see exactly how this plays out. But I've had a conversation in my conflict resolution classes where we've talked about if we was to bring this to the UN, what would it look like? So we've talked about the Geneva Convention. We've talked about what it means, basic human rights. We've talked about what it means to have sanctions against you. And my question is, you get these sanctions against the United States. So let's say the UN holds a debate and they feel like they want to hold and bring sanctions. They hold this debate and feel like they want to hold the United States and apply sanctions against the United States for their conduct of police brutality against black people. What does that mean? It depends on the sanctions that they apply. That is something that I am definitely keeping my eye on. And as it continues, I will be talking more about it on my shows because I am interested in it. But if you impose them, who's going to enforce them? How would they enforce them? I don't know where we stand military-wise. I know that we are officially in a recession at this moment. So we have been taking a hit since Trump has been president because of the simple fact of the things that he has done. So I'm not understanding exactly where we would go. So I feel like, and if you do have questions, feel free to email them. Feel free to message me on Facebook, Black Justice Initiative, to give me your thoughts or what you feel, because it is an interesting debate to go on, and it's what I've been thinking of, because I know that we cannot sue the United States for act of genocide, but I'm interested to see how this debate will play out, because officially the United States has removed themselves from the UN, so they're technically not a part of the United Nations. So it will be kind of hard. Now, in the past, when there has been an act of genocide going on in a country, or it's gotten to that point of enough continents, if enough continents come together, they could possibly wage war on the United States for their acts of genocide and their police brutality and how they are treating the people in this country, black people specifically. So it is interesting to see, because that was kind of what happened with Holocaust. Is I believe, if I'm not mistaken, don't quote me on this, but if I'm not mistaken, when Hitler was running rampant throughout and assassinating, committing an act of genocide against all Jews, I believe it became a matter of the UN, and the United States themselves in a way to war to save the Jews, to fight. So again, don't quote me on that, because I'm not, I've studied the Holocaust a couple of times, but not as much as I studied the plights of my own people. So I am vaguely familiar with it, but I do know that there has been times where war can be waged to change a situation. So I am not claiming Trump as my president, but with the United States president being as stubborn as he is and being such a asshole, I believe if they ever did bring any sanctions while he's in office, that nigga would provoke us into a war. So I believe that he would definitely, if he was over here antagonizing China, antagonizing Korea. So I definitely feel like is in office, and they do try to apply, if it does come down to the point and they make it to the point that there are sanctions against the United States for their treatment of black people in this country, Trump will probably antagonize them to the point that they would have to come over here and wage war. Because Trump is stupid. He's not smart. He doesn't know. He is a bully. So he would make sure, he would do something to make it open season and say that it's open season on black people, to the point that you will have all these folks jumping out of pocket, and it would cause a race war, to the point that they would have to come in. If they apply sanction against the United States, they would have to come in and it'd be a war. And they would wage war on the United States to tell them, like, you can't be treating your people like that. Now, that I am speaking hypothetically. I'm not saying this is going to happen. I'm not saying that it may happen. I'm just saying I'm interested in knowing and finding out what will they do. And if they decide to ever sanction the United States, with the United States no longer being a part of the UN, how will they enforce it? Because they removed themselves from the UN. Trump removed us from the UN in 2018. He removed, his first year in office, actually. He removed us from the UN. So it's interesting to know, but it does give me a glimmer of hope that the UN is paying attention to the United States and seeing what is going on, because the black community has attempted in the past, in the 1950s to be exact, to attempt to bring the United States before the world court, to bring them, to have them up for acts of genocide. If you do not know what entails when it says the genocide is me basically killing off of people based off of their race, makeup, or creed. So it's pretty much talking to person, a particular people, just like Hitler did with the Jews. He targeted them based off their religion and based off, I think it's blonde-haired, blue-eyed devil, I think he was aiming at with Hitler. That was an act of genocide. The Trail of Tears was an act of genocide. It was targeting Native Americans. So what America is doing right now, allowing the lynching and public lynchings, and even lynching doesn't necessarily mean you got to hang me from a tree. Let's be clear about that. You don't have to hang me from a tree to be saying that you lynch. That is a lynching. Shooting and gunning me down and targeting someone strictly off of their race and killing them because of the race is a lynching. And what we have going on right now, you are seeing the wrath of people who are tired. Who are tired to the fact that we are dealing with and still dealing with the things that our parents and grandparents went through in the 60s. I think last year, last week, my dad was here. If you do not know, my dad is 74 years old. He grew up through the 60s. He remembers where he was, what he was doing the day Martin Luther King was assassinated. So, like, we are still dealing with those type of things today. Me and my dad, we have discussions. And a lot of times we go head-to-head because, one, he's an Aries. Hush, Khadijah, don't laugh again. He's an Aries, and he's very strong-willed. And for two, because he's older, he sees it a little bit different. So we often conflict. We have the same motives. We have the same result that we want. But we often conflict. We often have a conflict because he's older and from a different time period, and I'm younger. But we both agree. He said when I first had to deal with being a target of the feds, that he said, it scares me what you do, but I don't want my grandson to have to do what you do. So I want you to change the world so my grandkids can have a better life. So they don't have to deal with this thing. But the thing is they are, because my son is 13, my daughter is 7. And so they are seeing this. My daughter doesn't fully understand yet, but my son does. At 13, and him being Omo Rumula is just amazing because that boy picks up on everything, and his knowledge and wisdom is way beyond his years and his purpose. And I feel like if it is anybody that, I ain't gonna say that because both of my kids lit, so I can't say which one I feel will be my legacy, because I feel like both of them in their own way will set the pavement to continue on whatever I start and what I've started. And I'm interested to see what the UN is going to do in response to everything that's going on. So at this point, we are wrapping up. Thank you guys for tuning in to my show. I know I still got a few minutes left, but if you would like to shout out anyone, please send me a message and I'll shout them out. But at this point, I do want to shout out my homeboy, Joseph, for And My Skin Is My Sin, Intellectual Petty Radio, for giving me this opportunity, for just giving me this platform to be able to do this. If you are on Facebook, if I send you a link, please share my shit. Share my radio. Please follow me I am the founder of Black Justice Initiative. I am currently revamping my organization. So please follow us on Facebook, Black Justice Initiative. We're on Instagram, Black Justice Initiative, and on Twitter. I'm not as active on Twitter, but I will pop in here and there on Twitter to post something to keep some of my followers going. But Instagram, follow us. Facebook, follow us. And if you see my show come up, please share my shit. Also, I know that my colleagues on My Skin Is My Sin, they have a radio show tomorrow night. If you want to listen, tune in. Please look up My Skin Is My Sin. It'll be a dope-ass radio show. It's always lit because we always bring it to you real and raw. Just know I appreciate you guys listening. Just please put the word out, continue to spread, continue to tell people about it. If you have any questions, if you want me to address something on my show, you want my perspective on something and you want me to talk about it, please send me an email at info at blackjusticeinitiative.com. I will get it, and I will definitely work it into my schedule. Please, I will see you guys back here Wednesday at 6 p.m. Every Wednesday at 6 p.m., we will be doing this. Next week, the topic of our show will be juvenile justice. We will be talking and addressing the unfair sentencing practices of juveniles caught in the system. I will have a special guest who will be here to talk and give her opinion and talk about her experience of the juvenile justice system and how unfair it is, especially the racial divide and the racial disparities and racial discrimination that goes on when it comes to juveniles in the system. So please tune in with us next week at 6 p.m. I have a special guest for you guys. Thank you for sharing. Thank you for listening. I appreciate you. Again, shout out to Black Justice Initiative. That's my organization. Shout out to all my listeners. Shout out to My Skin Is My Sin, Intellectual Petty Radio. I am out for the night. Thank you guys for listening. We have 20 minutes left, but I'm going to go ahead and end it early. And I'll see you guys back here next week for our discussion on juvenile justice system. And I'm out.